And so it was just a little more challenging to go out with a bow. And even though it was more rewarding, you do have to spend more time. And you have good friends at bow hunt, and so it's fun to go out and hang out in the woods and shoot arrows at squirrels.
And how many squirrels have you put arrows through?
I actually never have. But my friend Jerry Woodland has.
My dad loves the outdoors, especially hunting and fishing. He's 84 years old now, which means he's got a lifetime of great stories to tell. So that's what this show is. I'm Eldon Nelson, and this is Hunting and Fishing Stories with My Dad Gene.
One year we were hunting, and a filming crew came by that was filming elk hunts and archery hunts for one of the television programs. And they asked if we had anything. And I said, yeah, we right there hanging in a tree. And they looked, they thought that we might be talking about an elk. We were talking about a squirrel that Jerry had arrowed and skinned it out and had the squirrel hide tacked to the tree. And I remember him going inside trying to eat it, and he cooked it up. And fortunately, there was only enough meat for one person, and that wasn't me. So these guys filmed part of that, and we're not sure whether it ever aired on a national television program.
We'll have to track that down. So which is more fun to hunt, elk or deer?
Well, I enjoyed them. You get more chances at deer where we used to hunt, because we could see quite a few mature bucks during the archery season. But that kind of declined, and so it was more enjoyable to go out and spend your time after the elk.
Yeah.
And the elk aren't quite as wary because they're bigger. They don't have to be aware of all their surroundings as much as deer do. But the elk, you can make a little movement or make a little noise, and it doesn't seem to bother them that much. So if you get close enough, you got a pretty good chance of putting an arrow into one.
How do you get close enough to shoot an elk?
Well,
or a deer? That's half of the skill, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the key element to get close enough. And some of the modern bows and modern equipment, bow hunters these days that are really good at it, they can put an arrow in one 50 or 60 yards away. But I always felt my limitation was probably 25 to 30 to 35 yards. But I didn't use a release. I didn't use sights. I just used fingers and estimated how far away it was. So
I was talking to someone recently about you bow hunting, and he's someone who bow hunts himself, and he simply couldn't comprehend bow hunting without a release and without a sight. And I mean, a pretty sophisticated setup now, a pretty modern setup, I guess. So describe the kinds of bows and arrows that you've used. I mean, you didn't really even start with a compound bow until, well, I don't know when. Start with a recurve and the types of bows and arrows that you've used, and what's bought and what's made yourself.
Yeah, well, in the early years, you used a recurve, and that's strictly, there's a finger glove and a string and an arrow on it. And usually hunted elk with a bow that had about a 55 draw weighted with a 28-inch arrow. And the arrows that I liked the best were made by Easton Aluminum. Mm-hmm. And it was a high grade of aluminum anodized, and it was tough and light. And we could make them ourselves, cut them to the right length, and put feathers on them. Modern guys use a lot of plastic feathers, plastic. And I always liked the real feathers. It gave me a little more flexibility on releasing the arrow. And I think guys with the high-tech arrows and fletching and releases can shoot more accurately, but still the key element is getting close enough.
Yeah.
And those Easton arrows, we call them, they were 2114s. That was the Easton size. And that's what I always liked the best. And the broadhead I liked the best was a three-blade broadhead. The early days with the recurve, we used to use bare razor heads, and that was just a two-blade, old-fashioned broadhead. That's what mm-hmm. about the only thing that was on the market. And one of the first deer that I got with one, the broadhead just bent straight over, and they weren't that strong. But I got the deer. But the so those were the best arrows that I had.
Yeah.
They gave a little more flexibility with your shoot with a release or with your fingers. You probably not quite as accurate, but if you practice enough, you just look and see and you know about how far away it is. And the example I used to give was that it's kind of like a professional basketball player. When he gets the ball, he doesn't look and say, well, I'm about this far away and I got to arc it like this. He just knows where he is and jumps and shoots. And that's kind of the way it was and still is probably with me. And you just know about how far distant it is and you know where to hold and how to release. And hopefully you can put an arrow right behind the front legs and you got an elk.
So the... I want to go back to how do you actually get within shooting within shooting range of one? Because that seems to me, I mean, I not being much of a hunter, but I've tried to get close to deer. I've tried to get close to elk, and I always scare them away.
Well, the elk are bigger animals, and mm-hmm. We used to, what they call, just a spot and stalk. You see it, try to see some across the canyon or where they're feeding, and then get downwind from them and just sneak up there carefully. And a lot of times, if you can see them before they see you and you're downwind where they can't smell you, because their eyesight's good, but they're just not as worried about every little snap of a twig. And so, and then if you're there during the rut, when the bulls are seeking out the cows, you can hear the bulls bugling, and you can spot them that way. Hmm. And one of the favorite common places of finding a bugling elk is you can bugle on your instrument and get him to respond. And hopefully, sometimes you can call him in. One of the interesting times was when I was hunting with Jerry Woodland, and his dad was with us. He'd never got an elk with a bow. And one evening up the canyon, I'd heard a bull bugling, so I knew about where he was and where he's going to be the next morning. So we got up there to where I'd heard this bull bugling, and I had Jerry's dad, we were downwind from him, go about 50 yards up through the timber and get set. Then I was going to call the bull and see if it'd come down to me, then it'd go past him. Mm-hmm. So I start bugling, and sure enough, this bull was in the same spot, and he came down, and then all of a sudden I heard all kinds of crashing noise and the bull going over the hill. So when I found Jerry's dad, first shot he'd shot the arrow up in the trees, and the next shot he dropped the arrow on the ground.
Oh, no.
And... the bull didn't take any more of that and ran away. So all day long, when we were walking along, he was still reliving that chance and kicking the ground and But he finally got over it.
Did he ever manage to get one?
Yeah, he finally did. Not with us, but he went hunting with an old friend of his over in Utah. He got a nice bull with his bow.
All right. Okay. So eventually a happy ending.
Yeah.
So we've sort of been a little bit all over the place, but I remember as a boy growing up watching you make your own arrows. So you would start with the arrow shafts and then putting in the notch. I may not be using the right word.
Yeah, the shafts we would buy. Mm-hmm.
Right.
We'd buy them in bulk from Eastern Aluminum. Mm-hmm. And they're full length.
Did you cut those down to
you need to cut them down. My draw length was about 28 inches.
Right.
And so you cut them off to the length that you want. And then you use a glue that they sell over the counter mm-hmm. to glue the nock in it.
The nock, right.
And then you put a broadhead insert aluminum in the other end. Mm-hmm. And it's glue it in.
And then you would thread in.
And the thread the broadhead into mm-hmm. that.
But the feathers, or the fletching, would always seem to be the most complicated part, threading that on.
Yeah, the fletching, I had a little fletching device that you put the nock in a little slot. Mm-hmm. And then the mechanical device would hold the feather in the same angle and put some glue on the bottom of the feather. And clamp it down onto your arrow shaft and let it dry. And that was about all there was to it. You do them one at a time with whatever colors you want to use. Always used to use white ones as the crown feather, the cock feather. Mm-hmm. And so.
So are these real feathers then?
Yeah, they're made by a company out of turkeys. Mm-hmm. And they either have a left wing or a right wing. And they somehow cut them and split them so the bottom part is the real part of the feather that the glue will, the feathers attached to that bottom part. I don't know what they call it, but that's where you put the glue. And the clamp just holds it in place so they go on the right place every time and let them dry and you're ready to go. The only downside of it is if you're getting wet weather, the wet weather causes those turkey feathers sometimes to change shape. So always used to carry a little plastic bag if it started to rain just to slip that over the feathers and keep them dry.
And did you find that your arrows were a pretty much uniform flight? Or did you find that some were... just depending on how you had built them, whether some flew straighter or better than others?
Well, the shafts come in different weights or different thicknesses. Mm-hmm. And if you bought a dozen of those 2114 Easton shafts, they were all identical.
Right.
And the feathers were identical. And the broadheads are identical. So if you put it together right, then all the arrows are identical.
And I guess that's my question is, did you generally put them together right? It seems like that is getting the feathers on just right would be the tricky part.
The mechanical fletching device holds them. It's made mechanically. So,
oh, okay. So there wasn't so much having to eyeball it.
No, I wasn't guess. But that leads me to another story.
Okay.
I was up hunting with Jerry Woodland and came back to camp and had gotten a bull elk. Mm-hmm. So when I went up with him to help take care of it and haul it out, he hadn't skinned it yet. And so we skinned it back and he was using his old recurve bow with a two-blade bear razor head. And when he skinned it, you could see the up and down cut. Went right between the ribs and out the other side, right between the ribs with the broadhead, straight up and down. Mm-hmm. And I was commenting about it. I said, you were really lucky on that. And his words were, well, if you'd put your broadheads on right, you could do that too. But what he didn't add was that the arrow was spinning and there's no way putting the broadheads, where, no matter how they were on, it just happened to be straight up and down between the ribs going in and coming out.
That was a nice piece of luck.
So, but he always used to get after me because my broadheads weren't the same way that he would put them on.
So how did you do it versus how did he?
Well, it didn't make any difference to me.
Right.
Because as soon as you release, the arrows aren't straight along the shaft. They're put on a helix, a little angle to them. So as soon as you shoot the arrow is spinning.
It's corkscrewing through the air.
Yeah,
right.
It's coming right out of the bow, and as soon as it moves, it's spinning before, right after it leaves the string. And so it doesn't matter how you put the broadhead on, long as they're on true. And because the elk could be a foot away or a foot closer, and the arrow might be straight up and down or it might be sideways. But he knew that too, but he was just giving me a hard time. Put your broadheads on right, you could do that too.
That's good.
That's it for this episode. If you have a question for my dad, you can email me at eldennelson@gmail.com. That's eldennelson@gmail.com. I'll have more stories soon. Thanks for listening to Hunting and Fishing Stories with My Dad Gene.